start. Okay, we're starting the next Mishnah on Daf Hey Amud Beis at the bottom. Before we're going to start that Mishnah, we have to be thoroughly comfortable with this Pasuk. This is a Pasuk about testimony. Al Pi Shnayim Edim, by the testimony of Shnayim Edim, two witnesses. O Shlosha Edim, or three witnesses, Yumas Hames, they will put to death the person who should be executed to be put to death. The Lo Yumas, he will not be put to death, Al Pi Eid Echad, based on two witnesses.
One
witness. Sorry about that. Okay, my mind was already thinking of the question as I was talking. I was getting a little too ahead of myself. Okay, what do you feel is like sort of extra in that process?
Three witnesses.
Yeah, three witnesses. That's for sure extra. Because the threshold level is two witnesses. Okay, so why would the Torah have to talk about three witnesses? Also, even if they did, it could have written it shorter. It could have been Al Pi Shnayim O Shlosha Edim. You don't have to say Edim twice, right? You know, based on the first, they have two witnesses or three witnesses. So you could have said two or three witnesses. So there's really two things that are extra, so to speak. The three is extra, and the second time saying witnesses is extra. All right, so obviously the Torah's coming to teach you something over there. Okay, and that's what the discussion is going to be in this next Mishnah. It's a long Mishnah.
Yeah.
Okay, starting like this. He repeats the Pasuk. Al pi shnayim edim o shlosha edim yumas hames. So the Gemara asks, the Mishnah asks the obvious question. Im miskayemes ho edus b'shnayim, if the testimony can be established with two witnesses, lama parada kasa b'shlosha, why did the Torah specify three witnesses? Must be it's trying to teach us something. And what's it teaching us? Ela lahakish shlosha l'shnayim, but rather to draw a comparison between three witnesses and two witnesses in the following way. That just like ma shalosha mezimes hashnayim, just like that it's obvious that three witnesses could discredit two witnesses through hazama, right? Mm-hmm. I mean just on a simple level, because three is more than two, but anyway, but three could discredit two. But the chiddush is af hashnayim yezumo es hagimol, but two could discredit three. That's what the Torah is teaching us, that even though there's more witnesses there, two can discredit three. Now, so that's what he's saying that's coming to teach. Now, we've already learned a machlokas, remember we said, if two discredit two, and then another two, and then another two. Remember that machlokas? Rabbi Yossi said that's kind of fishy looking. The rabbi said that's okay. But I guess that's two at a time. But here, like, two is taking on three, right? So, therefore, Hazama works even if once you're two, that's good enough, as good as three, as good as anything else. And we'll see. Uminayin, how do you know? Afilu mea, if two want to discredit 100.
Yeah.
Right? So how do I know that? All right? That 100 witnesses who testified to something and two other witnesses then testified, they saw all 100 of them somewhere else. Right? Since the law that the second set is believed over the first is a novelty, it might be thought the Torah decreed this novelty only when the number of witnesses in each set is the same. Granted, learn from the analogy cited that two can discredit even three, logic would dictate we limit the novelty to that case. No, it says even, how do we know that? Talmud Lomar, the extra word, Edim, witnesses. Okay, so that repetition says that no matter how many witnesses. Now, remember what we look at this. Remember, I've just brought it up already. We learned in the previous Mishnah that Yehuda rejects the testimony of one group of witnesses who discredit group after group of other witnesses. His argument was explained by the Gemara above that it's not reasonable to assume that all of these additional sets of witnesses happen to be with these two Hazama witnesses. But what then the law of our Mishnah? Our Mishnah seems to be brought without any dispute. This mishnah is no dispute. What's he going to do with that? Right? Why do we accept two witnesses to discredit 100 witnesses at one time, but according to Rabbi Yehuda, and not accept two witnesses to discredit two witnesses of witnesses at two different times? Mm-hmm. Trying to understand the difference. This seems to be no machlokas in this mishnah. Yeah. The other mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda, so how does Rabbi Yehuda agree to this, but disagree at two at a time? Do you understand the question? Arachlaner suggests in one answer that indeed the ruling of our Mishnah is not consistent with Rehuda's view above. In other words, Rehuda would disagree with this. The Mishnah only brought him in one place, and he would disagree with this. Alternatively, there's nothing inherently implausible about two witnesses having been together somewhere with 100 other people. There are certain occasions when this occurs, like a wedding. Yeah. If, however, this were the case, then it should have emerged during the questions of the Hazama witnesses during the first Hazama trial, that the first witnesses were then somewhere else in the presence of a large group of people. If this did not emerge during the detailed examination of the Hazama witnesses, then the only way the second set of witnesses can be discredited is by the Hazama witnesses testifying they were with them at a slightly different time, but one that still made it impossible to have witnessed the crime. Is this coincidence, the Hazama witnesses just happening to have been together with two different sets at different times, that makes their testimony implausible? In other words, it's a little bit different. Right, it's a little bit now, a little bit later.
Yeah.
So that already is extending the period of time of that.
Same time.
Okay, so fine. So anyway, so you see, there is a little difference that he could say that it's here when it's knocking off 101 time, it's one thing, but here it's a little bit. You're saying we're a little different places. Okay, fine. That's the Tanakama. That's what we learn from these extra words, that two can knock off as many. Next rap, yeah.
Quick question. When you're saying as many, we're not saying as many different sets as you want, but one group that's like as big as it is. Qualitatively, they're
yeah,
different.
One group of 100 people.
Okay, fine.
The other machlokas, it doesn't matter. We're all there together. 100 witnesses come. 100 people, the whole wedding part. Someone murdered somebody at a wedding. Ichveis. So who saw it? Everybody saw it. 100 witnesses come.
They were all at the same time.
Yeah, they were all there. So now another two say, no, you weren't. It was a different wedding.
It's 100 times. No, you weren't. No, you weren't. No, you weren't.
They just discredited all of them. On one shot. One shot. That's a Tanakhama. Reb Shimon is going to learn a different teaching. Not that he necessarily will argue on this halacha. We're going to have three opinions in this Mishnah. The commentaries say it's not that they're arguing, no, you're wrong, but yes, it's this. Some suggest they're going to say, well, you know what? You really didn't need a pasuk for that. Logic could say, once you accept two witnesses, so two witnesses are good. So what should it matter, even 100? So therefore, Reb Shimon says it's going to be a different teaching we learn from the 2 and 3. Mashnaim ein herogin achu shnehem zomamim. We have a rule, we already learned it, we're going to learn it, that for Adam Zomim to get killed, you have to discredit both of them.
Right.
You have to. We did it yesterday. Okay,
yeah. The story of the rabbi who made him
a yes, mistake. Yes.
Yeah.
No, but that's...
you can't take out one.
Yeah.
Killed, did one, but yeah, right.
Oh, you're right. We just... no, that was Nigmar Hadin. Yeah, okay. That was Nigmar... No, that was a little different. I know what you're talking about. There, it's one guy just came along. Here we're saying when you have two zomamim, two false witnesses, even if you prove one of the two, you still can't kill him because you have to disprove both of them.
Right.
That case you learned was only one witness came. It was only one witness at all. But he made a mistake. So I'm saying with this case a little bit different.
One was zomamim.
He made a mistake. That's... You learned the Gemara yesterday?
Yeah, you can't,
so it was wrong. He was wrong.
I know, but I
he was wrong.
That he thought he could discredit one of them. Two and kill the one.
Yeah.
Not just accept a witness, the testimony of one.
Yeah. The way we learned it was two witnesses came.
Okay, fine.
No, they were both proven and charged as false witnesses. He only killed one of them.
I guess the base would accept one witness.
One was not.
The witness made a mistake. The best didn't make a mistake.
Okay, fine.
He killed one of them.
Fine.
So,
all right, where was I? I'm just trying to... no, that's probably the later case over here, right? It was over here. Yeah, that's what... okay, fine. That's what, you have to be Muslim both. Good, good. Okay, fine. So just like you have to be mazim both, so what if you have three witnesses and you're mazim? How many do you have to prove to be liars there? We said if there's two, you got to knock them both off.
Right.
If you knock one off, that's not good enough. You have to knock them both off. But what about three and you knock two off? So av shlosha, that's what we're saying, two and three. Av shlosha, that's the chiddush of the extra word three. That even three ain't an argument at your shlosha, but you only can kill three if all three are knocked out. Okay, now that's a big chiddush. Why? Because I already knocked off two is enough to have the execution, the ruling that that the guy is going to be chayv misa. With two, it would have been enough.
Right.
So the fact that I discredited two, that those two guys got the guy killed. If there wasn't the third guy, these two guys would have done the job on their own.
Right.
So let's figure, if I discredit two of them, it's enough to kill them. No, you have to discredit all three.
Oh.
Just like when there's two, you got to discredit both.
Yeah.
So that's the chiddush. Even though there's three, you got to discredit all three. Wait, just 1 second.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel, what if even 100?
Right.
It's 100 witnesses. You got to discredit all.
Oh.
They all came at the same time. We said we all saw it. We all came at the same time.
And you kill them
Talmud Lomar, yeah. Ate him. No, you don't kill them all until all 100 have been discredited.
Okay.
That's the chiddush. In other words, a group of three come in. We all saw it. Okay, then later another group says, you two could not have seen it. You were with us. The third guy, we don't know. So we can't kill those two until you discredit all three.
So they get saved by the honest guy.
Well, or at least we don't know if he's honest. Remember, innocent until proven guilty, except in the United States, and you're a Republican. But so that's the chiddush. I mean, the first one was also shtickle chiddush. Even with two, it's a shtickle chiddush. You discredit one, should be enough to kill the guy. But no, halacha is not like that. So once you're saying that, we apply it to even more than two. And that is a chiddush that you need the extra words of the Torah to tell you that. Yeah?
Well, you have two questions. What if it's the opposite? What if you discredit one? There's still two valid, two that haven't been discredited.
Well, hang on, my friend. That's the next one.
Okay.
It's the next line.
All right. So the other question is, I'm just going to lose my train of thought. What did you just say?
I just said that just like when you have two, one is not enough to kill them. You have to discredit both. So when there's three, you have to discredit all three to kill all three. If you only discredit two, you can't kill them.
Yeah. Is it kind of like a Kol V'Chomer? If you have to discredit, if you discredit one when there's only two, then nobody gets executed. Then if you discredit two,
I would think you'd kill them because that was enough people to have killed the guy.
Yeah, they could have left him out of the group.
Well, I guess so. When you discredit one of two, right? Never enough.
So Rabbi Akiva comes along. You have to be careful how to read this next line now. So we have two opinions already. What is 2-3 teaching us? That we said that two can discredit three or even 100, and that when you've got two or three, right? We even though if you discredit two, it's not enough. You got to discredit them all to kill them all. Rabbi Akiva Omer. Rabbi Akiva says lo bo hakosav lo bo hashlishi lahakel. That three is not coming to be lenient, because according to this Rav Shimon, it's a leniency. Until you get all three, you don't kill anybody.
Yeah.
He says, the Pasuk's not teaching a leniency, but it's teaching you a stringency. Now, he doesn't mean to say, I disagree with that law that Rav Shimon says. He's just saying you didn't need to learn it from a Pasuk. That's all he's saying. He's not arguing on the law. All these laws are correct. Question is that what you need the Pasuk to teach us or not?
Oh, okay.
That's all. But he agrees that if you have all three, you got to knock off all three. The pasuk's not coming to that. That would be a leniency to the false witnesses because you don't kill them all till they're all proven wrong. He said, no, it's going to tell us a stringency. Listen to the stringency like this. Velasos dino kiyotzebeilo, to make the law of the third guy like the other two. In other words, if there are three false witnesses, okay. Now, the truth, and all three are proven liars. So the third guy could say, listen, you didn't need me anyway. You had two. Yeah. You had two to kill him anyway. I didn't make it any. I didn't make the guy any more dead than he was already. So once I'm the extra guy, why should you kill me?
Yeah.
To which he's saying, no, two or three, once you're in the group, even if you're not necessary, you get knocked off. That's what he's saying. The verse teaches that though this testimony was unnecessary, since the court would have convicted the accused on the strength of the testimony of the first two witnesses alone, in other words, shares their punishment if they were all found to be Zomim. Now, that was who? That was Rabbi Akiva, right? No, so according to Rabbi Shimon, going back one opinion, the analogy between two and three teaches a leniency. That if two out of the group of three are found to be Zomim, they are not executed, even though they would have been executed had they come without the third witness. Rabbi Shimon's view now is in turn predicated on the Tanakhama's assumption that if not for analogy, we would assume that when the Torah speaks of a witness, it might refer specifically to two witnesses, and the law for three would be different. Rabbi Akiva takes exception to this assumption and to the explanation deriving from it. Rabbi Akiva does not disagree with the law stated by the earlier Tanoim. He merely maintains that no new scriptural source is needed to teach them, for they can be established logically. Since the testimony of two witnesses is universally accepted by the Torah, and the Torah has established that two witnesses have the power to discredit other witnesses by Hazama, why should we question the ability of two to discredit even 100? Thus, the Tanakhama's exposition is unnecessary, right? If you know two is good, so why would you think two couldn't knock off more? That's why he said, I don't need a pasuk for that. I agree with it. But thus, okay, and once we know Torah treats sets of two witnesses and sets of three equally, we know they're the same, must conclude that the term aid, witness used in regard to Zomim refers to any set of witnesses, regardless of its size. Since three or 100 witnesses become one set when they testify together, the phrase "Vinei aid sheker ha'aid," and behold, the witness is a false witness, teaches that the entire group must be discredited for the Zomim penalty to apply. Thus, Rav Shimon's expert is unnecessary. Okay, the point of the analogy must therefore be to teach astringency in regard to three. Okay, that's the point. Now, interesting, although all three are considered part of a single set of witnesses, so the question is, who's going to say that they didn't need me, though? They have all three. Everyone's going to say, oh, you didn't need me. Well, between the three, how are we going to know? So which one would think to get off, right? It can be argued the third witness to testify did not attempt to harm the accused, since he would have been convicted even without his testimony. Accordingly, the third witness should not suffer the Zama punishment. The verse therefore states its analogy to teach that when the third witness testifies, he too is considered one of those two. Obviously, you have to go in an order. You hear one, two, three. They can't hear all three guys at one time. Yeah. They call the first guy in alone, call the second guy alone, call the third guy alone. Yeah. So the third guy will say, listen, once you heard the first two guys already, you didn't need me.
Yeah.
But we say, no, once you're coming as one group, and therefore that teaches you the leniency. All three laws are true. The only question is, are we saying that the psukim is teaching me it, or would I have understood it from logic? That's the only debate.
It wouldn't be right if the third guy got off, because it's a lottery. I mean, it depends who they call first. If you're lucky enough to be called third, you're going to get off.
No, that's what it says. It shouldn't make a difference.
Yeah,
one,
well,
two, three.
Okay, but you're right, but in practice... But in logic, once the two have been heard, it's been decided.
Yeah,
okay? Now, okay.
One second on that point. What if the second one, his testimony kind of contradicts the first one?
Well, then you throw it out.
Oh,
throw it out.
Yeah. Now the third one comes in, and he agrees with the first one.
Throw them all out.
No, all out.
Out.
Yeah. So as long as one, so you can't.
Yeah, they came in as a group.
Yeah.
So.
Or whatever. Once you have, now, if you have two against one, would be different. But it's not two against one, it's three. They all came in as one group.
So the group has to.
Once you find something wrong somewhere in the group,
out.
Three guys came in, and we said we saw it, and we said, well, you know, it's not matching. It's not
matching. The whole thing
out. Okay. Yeah, because he's disagreeing with them. You all came together. How come your statements, I guess two of you knew how to lie better than the third guy? Within your own group, it's got to be solid. You're going to see how far this goes. You're going to see how far this goes. Now the Gemara just takes a little side point, just a little Musar idea, just to take us off for just 1 minute. So what do you see? A guy who's not necessary, the third guy, who joins a bad group, gets punched. So anybody connected to a bad group gets punished. What if you connect yourself to a good group and you're not so necessary? I'm not talking about Jewish court now. I'm saying, you know, whatever. Somebody needs a chesed, and he only needed two people to do the chesed, and the third guy says, I want to help too. But he really didn't need you, but he wanted to be part of it too. So we're going to say like this. Ve'im kein, if so, wa'anash ha'kosev, so if this is how the Torah punishes, linitpa la'ovrei avera ka'ovrei avera, anyone who's an accomplice to the transgressors, he's treated like the transgressors. The third guy wasn't even here, but we're going to treat him just like those two. Alach as kama v'kama, all the more so, because we know for good, Hashem rewards 500 times more than bad. Yeshalem sachar, Hashem should reward. Lenit palo se mitzvah se mitzvah, to those who become accomplices to the performing of a mitzvah. Just a side point, a nice Musar idea. For we find that the reward allowed to those who perform good deeds is proportionally greater. Yeah, I did that. So kindness is bestowed upon thousands. Okay, fine. So that's the point. So even though...
Rabbi Akiva is saying to join groups, even if you're not necessary?
A third person, you know, even though two could get it done, but a third guy wants to be part of it, he will be rewarded as well. Okay, that was just a nice side point. Now let's move on. So we've got three halachas so far. Two can knock off three. Two can knock off 100. We learned that you can't knock off anybody unless they're all. It's all or nothing. And we also are saying that, yes, it's all or nothing to punish them. And it's all in all that even if we didn't need you, you're going to get punished. Those are the three halachas. Now we're going to move on and say the following. Now that we've on this topic and we're talking about big groups, so now the Gemara continues, or Rabbi Akiva continues with another lesson from the analogy. Second point he's learning from this. Umash Naim, let's say you have a group of two, and Nimtz Echem and Korav Apostle. You find one of them's a relative. As you're asking the questions, you find out one's a relative, or one is a not honest witness. We find out that he eats treif. You know, it's not only you go to be a witness. Bezen says, first they want to get to know you a little bit. And they say, are you first of all, do you swear that you are a Jewish observant Shomer Torah mitzvah? You keep all 613 mitzvahs? Says, I think so. Says, let me ask you a couple of questions. Do you know the laws of Lashon Hara? No. Oh, okay, well, there's not. It's impossible that you have it. Look at it. Do you know the laws of Shabbos? No. Well, for sure, Machal Shabbos. Let's get out of here. So when you are interrogating them, you could find out a lot of things. You can find out the guy is a relative, which is not good. You can find out he's not a kosher witness. When that happens, two witnesses come, and you knock out one. Well, then the testimony's finished, right? Relatives of the defendant or litigants in the case are disqualified. Also disqualified people who are considered untrustworthy because of their professions and sinners. Remember, according to one opinion, if you're a gambler,
pigeon
right? a pigeon racer, right? You're out. Okay? So, it's all kinds of relatives. It's a problem. In-laws, it's a big problem. Doesn't have to be Arias, incestuous relatives, as it were.
Yeah, even. So you get into all kind of ramifications.
Anyway, so we know if you have two and one gets knocked off, the other guy would say, sorry, what can you do? Well, that makes sense, really, because you really only have one.
Right.
But here's the chiddush. Well, it says two and three. So just like when you find in two, one gets knocked off, what becomes the result? A dusam bedela. The other witness has no standing, right, at all in a capital case. It could be other cases. Sometimes one witness is okay in general for what? In what case is one witness accepted?
Monetary.
No.
What's
your
Sota?
Yeah, Sota, who's already been warned before. Good remembering. I wasn't thinking of that, but that's a good one. Also, let's say to testify that a man died so his wife can remarry. That's an exception to the rule. And also, in a monetary case, to force an oath.
Yeah.
Only an oath. He can't make him pay, but he can make him make an oath.
Yeah.
Okay, but otherwise, for capital crimes, that we throw the other guy out. So just like if you find one out of two, get knocked up, and that's very logical because you only got one anyway. But here's the chiddush: Av Shlosh, let's say three witnesses come in, and Nimsech Mem Karav Apostle, you find one of them is a relative or one of them is disqualified, even though there's still two good witnesses left. A dosan betela, the testimony is knocked off. Minayin afilu me, how do you know even 100? Talmud Lomar, 80. And because the Torah treats a group like one whole group. And that's a big chiddush. Because now, what do you want? I mean, there's two good witnesses here. But since you're part of one group, that's what Torah is saying, two or three is a group. Once it's a group, once there's a problem with the group, there's a problem with the group. Okay, that's the second thing. So he's learning two halachas from this. But really it's the same idea. Once you're a group, it's sink or swim. Mm-hmm. You know, so you have a boat, right? Person drills a hole just in one little cabin of the boat. The whole boat sinks. So it's the same thing. This is like a ship of witnesses. Once you put a hole in the ship, it's down and the thing goes out. That's a chiddush, which we would not have thought to say, and that's what the Torah is telling us, two or three. So, and therefore, just like the third guy could say, well, what do you want from me? You didn't need me. Why should I get killed? No, once you're in that group, you go with what the group is, and, you know, you're hanging around, it just knocks off. Okay? Yeah?
I mean, a person could go in part of a large group.
He doesn't have to be part of that group, though. Remember, you could have four witnesses, two are one group, and two are a separate group. You could knock off one group, will not knock off the other group.
Somebody who's a relative of the accused could join a group and say, yeah, I saw two, and then find out he's a relative.
No, but he may not be part of the group. So that, so
it's problematic. They could use that as a loophole.
So then, but if the two other guys are going to say, you're a relative, what are you doing here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that means the witness have to be the other witnesses joining the group.
Wouldn't they get disqualified from the word go? Why do they have to go through the whole process first?
Well, you don't know until you start asking them questions.
That's what the Bedin is going to do.
So they're going to do that. So three guys walk in, and one of them's a criminal. So they say, your whole group is messed up. It's all messed up.
Are they allowed to come back?
I think part of that, what?
Are they allowed to come back if they take them out of the group?
I don't think so. I don't think so.
As a group, have to see each other as we're seeing the crime.
Yes, that's part of being the group. That's going to be the Shelley. I don't know what's with you. You're prophetic. It's going to be the next line of the Mishnah again. Okay, you have the Talmudic mind over here. So now, Rabbi Yossi, let's see what he's going to add over here, and we're going to see it's a bit of a machlokas. Amar Rabbi Yossi. One second, let's go back. Amar Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi says, but Madvarim, he says he's going to qualify this idea. When do we say that the disqualification of one of the three knocks them out, right? That's only bedine nefashos, only in capital cases. Because in capital cases, we have a much higher standard that we try to look for any possible way to let the guy off the hook. It's a legitimate way out. We really presume him innocent until 100% guilty. So once you find anything wrong, that's that. Because, you know, because it could be, well, he's a relative and he didn't really like him. It's his, you know, it's his mother-in-law, right? And then if he raises, like, he'll convince the other two to testify. Everson doesn't look so good already, right? To save a guy's life, any little thing. But avol bedine mamonis, but in a monetary case where we don't have that extra threshold level, we're just trying to know what do we think happened. Then he says, Tiskayim Aedis Bishar. Then the witnesses will remain, the testimony stays with the other ones, because we don't have that high threshold of that. According to Rabbi Yossi, the exposition should be understood to be limited to death penalty. Remember, what did the Pasuk say? Two or three, what was the end of that Pasuk? By two or three, you will kill the person. So that, now we could have said, well, that's for killing, but we'd say in all cases. But now he's saying, no, it's bedafka by killing, right? To be limited to death penalty case, because the Torah commands us to try and save a defendant for the death penalty and look for his exonerated. Is therefore reasonable to suppose the Torah would invalidate the Torah testimony for such a minor, would not, right? Is therefore reasonable to suppose the Torah would invalidate the entire testimony for such a minor reason. We would not, however, extend this invalidation to monetary cases, since logically there's no reason to invalidate the qualified. See, here what's going on over here. Reb Yossi is saying, wait a minute, when Rebbe Akiva said this, he would not have said that in a regular case because the other witnesses are fine. So the only time I'm really going to say this is when it's for death, to kill a guy. So tell the guy, in other words, when there's three guys and one's a relative, yeah, you got all these questions. Well, maybe, so what do we need the relative for? And maybe, you're right, so really we don't need him. So get him out. The other two would work in a monetary case. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to death penalty, even though it's just a slightly thing, that's all we need to take it out. That is the qualification. Mm. That's what Rabbi Yossi says, qualifying Rabbi Akiva's statement. Comes along Rebbe, he's going to argue on 2 points. Rebbe Omer, Rebbe says, nope. It's the same thing, monetary or capital. He says we just go with the same thing. However, there's one other point he says, though. Famous say, but when is this so? Bisman shehisru bahed. When they all made the warning prior to the crime happening. Okay? When the disqualified witness warned them, the transgressors, prior to their commission of the crime. Because by participating in the warning, he mamish is part of that group. Okay? Remember, can't be executed unless you do it after being warned, right? Now, doesn't mean all the witnesses have to be the warning people. Generally speaking, you could have 5 witnesses and 2 warned them, but the other 3 were right there. But we're saying he had to be one of the warners. If one of the relatives or the disqualified was actually giving the warning, that's when we're going to say it knocks it out. According to Rebbe, disqualified witness must become part of the larger set of witnesses from the very beginning in order for disqualification of valid testimony. What joins them in their intent to serve as witnesses at the time that they see the event, right? That their intention to serve as witnesses when it happened. This is demonstrated by their participation in the warning. A witness has to be, we mamish are there, we plan on being witnesses. In other words, when you warn a person, what are you doing? You're doing many things. Number one, you're going to make him able to die. But that means you're prepared to go to court and testify against guy. Well, else why are you warning the guy? You're going to warn the guy. Just why you know you're doing it over there. And then what? Then you do it.
You're trying to prevent him from doing it.
But it's another, but when you're warning him, that means you're going to now testify. You know, you want to be a halachic Jew. I mean, you see a person doing a very, you got to tell him to stop. But that's not enough. You got to tell him to stop. But if he does it, then he has to be punished. Just like you want to stop him from doing the Avera, you have to have him be punished so he gets kapara.
So you have to testify.
Same thing. So how do you know you want to be a witness? When you're making the testimony.
Yeah.
Right?
The warning.
When you're, that means you want to testify as you're seeing the event. Yeah. Clearly, this mode is of demonstration is relevant only to capital cases, not monetary ones. Mm. Right? Because monetary ones, you don't warn in advance that the guy didn't pay him back. You know, it's not likely a monetary case when you're seeing a guy stealing and you're saying, oh, stop stealing this and that. And that. Usually it wouldn't happen.
How could you be a witness then?
No, you could be a witness, but you can't give the warning. There'll be a different level you need to be a witness for monetary cases. Monetary cases, you know, when you borrow money, oh, we're warning you. You better pay back, or we're going to go to court. Or it doesn't fit, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But they could testify, we saw him borrow the money.
Yeah.
You don't warn in monetary cases. You could be a witness in monetary cases. But in other cases of death and lashes and things like that, you could warn. Since Rebbe is of the opinion that the rule invalidating an entire set of witnesses because of the disqualification of one of them applies even in monetary cases, so how are you going to fit that? Yeah. He says it's the same thing.
Right.
But he also says they have to be part of the warning, right? There must be other ways of determining whether those who witness an event intended to serve as witnesses. He doesn't explain. Moreover, the Mishnah's use of the past tense in regard to warning when they warned them and not if they warned them indicates that even in capital cases, warning is only one of the ways of determining that witnesses intended to testify from the very beginning. Gumar below will give another method of doing so, which we will see. But anyway, so it has to be part of it.
So warning is not the only way.
Yeah, it's going to be other, but this is the classic way. But there's other ways. Yeah.
I don't understand the warning. I mean, you see a guy, you're 50 yards away, and then he runs up to the guy and he stabs him. How are you going to get to him to warn him?
Then you didn't. Then you didn't. Then you can't. And he will not get the death penalty according to standard procedure.
He's in the process of doing it, and you need him to stop doing it because you're going to kill him. Stop it. We're warning you not to do it.
That's right. So we already went through that in Sanhedrin, that it isn't always going to come out to be able to convict him according to the standards of that we're discussing. Again, the guy doesn't necessarily get away with anything depending on a lot of other factors. And the Bezin has always discretionary powers, but there's two powers. One is to follow the rigid laws. That's one set of laws. And then the Bezin always has a discretionary power that's beyond anything else. Anyway, Aval Bizman, Shalozer, but what if they did not warn them? And they did not intend on serving as witnesses? So we don't automatically assume that you're part of the group. Even if he's standing there, there's four people standing there. Two people are warning, and two people are just watching. Doesn't mean they plan on being witnesses. Does not mean they plan on being witnesses. And let's say one of the guys watching is his brother. Oh, well, we knock it all out because his brother was a witness. When you're watching it, you have to decide that you are the witness. Right? But if the disqualifiers did not warn them and did not intend to serve as a witness, they're not automatically considered part of the group. And now he gives the analogy. He says, because after all, there's another thing I have to tell you. Also disqualified, let's say, if you're not related to the litigants, but you're related to the witnesses, we throw them out. If two brothers see something, forget it. Because that's like one. So that's what he says. If you're going to require, if anybody who saw it is a witness, even though he didn't plan on being a witness, says, "Ma yasu shnei achim." What are it going to be if two brothers see? Shiro ba'echa jerkin, that they see somebody killing somebody? In other words, if everyone who witnessed a crime were automatically considered part of the set of witnesses, a murderer who killed in the presence of two brothers and a third unrelated person would always go free. For two brothers are disqualified from testifying together. And the automatic inclusion of both of them in the set would therefore disqualify them and the unrelated witness. Since this is not plausible, it's evident that a disqualified witness does not automatically become part of the set of witnesses merely by seeing the crime. Rather, he becomes part of the group only by intending to be a witness. Thus, as long as one of the brothers does not participate in the warning, and how do we know? Simply, I know he wants to be, because he's warning them. There'll be other ways, but that's the simple way.
Both brothers warned.
Oh, if both brothers warned, then out you go.
Yeah.
But if you're smart, you know a little bit of halacha.
One of them.
You went at least to this Gemara class and learned this Mishnayos. And there's three guys, two brothers and a third fellow, and they see the guy's going. They say, listen, you can watch, but you keep quiet. The two of us are going to warn him. Seemingly, this problem could be easily resolved by having one of the brothers not come to court to testify. Right. Wait a minute. What if they all warned? Let's say the two brothers, and they did all warn.
Yeah.
Uh-oh, we all warned. We're brothers. It's okay. You know what? Stay home.
Stay home, yeah.
Right? Seemingly, this problem could be, since Rebbe does not consider this option, why didn't he say that? It's evident that even if the disqualified witness does not actually testify, it becomes part of the set and thereby invalidates their testimony.
Oh, wow.
Wow. Ooh, wow. But that's not everybody agrees to that. However, according to many Rishonim, the Gemara reverses itself on this point in its conclusion. How these, etc., that's fine. Okay, so it comes out, we've got a number of halachas over here. We have Rabbi Yossi saying that when do we knock out if one of the had Rabbi Akiva's broad statement, just to summarize this last part, Akiva's broad statement, if one of the witnesses is close or a brother or disqualified, we throw them all out. Rabbi Yossi qualified that only in capital cases, not in monetary cases. And then Rebbe says, really, either one, we'd throw them out, provided that they're part of the warning system. And that meant from the get-go, they want to be witnesses. But if they're not doing that, then they won't knock them out. That is what the Mishnah has to say. Okay, that's as far as we go. And we'll review all this on Shavuos night from the beginning.